Today on Rocking the Suburbs.
A box of 12 tapes in his parents' house that were just numbered 1 through 12.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rocking the Suburbs. Thank you for tuning in. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I am Patrick Foster, and I want to welcome you to part two of our conversation with Mark Masters about his excellent book, High Bias, The Distorted History of the Cassette Tape. I want to thank Harris King very much for helping me out with this interview, and appreciate his enthusiasm and knowledge on the topic. Before we jump into part two, I do want to mention that as you're hearing this on Friday, December 1st, we got the news yesterday that Shane McGowan, the frontman of the Pogues, passed away. And we're going to put together a tribute episode to him on Monday. So if you're listening to this now and you want to get your comment in for us to read or play, please get in touch with us. We'd really appreciate it. You can create a voice file and email it to rock@suburbspod.com, or you can call the Suburban Party line, 612-440-1984. And you'd have to do that right away before Sunday afternoon, if you could, and we'll get that on our tribute episode. Thank you very much in advance for anybody who has memories of the Pogues or Shane and would like to share those with everyone else. And with that, we are going to jump back into our interview with Mark Masters today on part two of a Book Nook.
Welcome to the Book Nook. Look, we have books. And over there, another book. And right over there, it's Kindle?
Harris and I were both really excited about this book and really excited to read it. I know we both enjoyed it, but what I did not anticipate was how much I was going to love the pictures, because I just thought, you know, I didn't put it together in my mind how visual cassettes, you know, actually can be, especially with the handcrafted. I mean, you know, just a page of like that picture of Jackknife Records and the picture with the Daniel Johnston cassettes all lined up. I mean, I just think the art is so cool. And after I finished the book, I've spent a lot of time looking at those pictures. How did you find this art? And did you, you know, choose these pictures, or do you work with someone to kind of go with them?
Well, that's interesting. It's funny. No one's really asked me about that, but it is kind of interesting because my first book, which was on No Wave, which came out like 15 years ago, was with a publisher who was very known for their illustration. And they had this whole team that were like, every time I'd submit a draft, they'd come back with all these pictures. Hey, I think you need, you know, whatever. And then when I signed the contract for this one, in it, it's had a paragraph about, you know, you're responsible for illustrations. I kind of figured, oh, that meant I'll help them or whatever. It's like, no, I had to do all of it myself completely.
Is that right?
Which was a little daunting. Not just tracking it down, but getting rights for stuff, and you know, because we didn't really have money, a little bit of money, but not much. So yeah, that was partial. Part of that was luckily I interviewed so many people that a lot of them could sort of help me track some things down. And I definitely wanted to get at least a little visual sense of how much people took advantage of the format of cassette to make interesting art. It's just from the bit blunt fact that it's a different aspect ratio than a record. It's not square, it's rectangular. So that gives some opportunities. Also the fold outs give, you know, could be infinite really. So there's so much different things you can put in those. And then of course the way people decorated handcrafted tapes and things like that. So I'm glad I was able to get what I got in there. The only real regret I have is that I couldn't get anything really hip hop oriented in there. It's hard to find anything that wasn't too expensive, but people should, you know, if they're interested, should go search on YouTube or on any part of the, you know, the web archive for hip hop mixtapes have some awesome artwork.
Yeah, some really, really cool stuff. You know, my experience with cassettes, obviously, you know, recorded a lot of music and released it on cassette, but One thing that I was talking with someone about was the fact that, and my example here is Flying Nun Records, I could get the cassettes from Flying Nun a lot cheaper than I could get the vinyl because the shipping was so much cheaper. So that's how I ended up with this big stack of you know, Flying Nun tapes that are pre-recorded tapes. But that's an aspect that I find interesting, you know, that it really is a lot cheaper to sort of send and, you know, manufacture and produce. And that remains a really wonderful thing about cassettes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's definitely the, go ahead.
I was going to say, I wish I owned the Flying Nun vinyl of all the cassettes I have, but
the original, yes.
Yeah, the original would be worth quite a bit. Yeah.
You'd be sitting on a gold mine there for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, definitely there was a lot of times when I bought the cassette because it was cheaper for all kinds of indie and major label records. And that's a big motivation for why labels now are going back to cassettes, because it's cheaper. It's much faster. I mean, vinyl's so clogged up now. Also like taking a box of cassettes on you with tours is a lot easier than taking a box of vinyl.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
I was going to say, I've been on work trips before where I've only had one bag with me and I'm not going to carry vinyl back on a plane. So I buy cassettes and stick them in, you know, a little side pocket or something like that.
I joined the Columbia House tape club back in the day.
Right.
I got cassettes instead of vinyl. Uh-huh. So.
Yeah, it's funny. You can still find those. They, you know, they had a little bit of different artwork on them when they were from the clubs. And I'll find those in thrift stores sometimes. And I can tell, oh, that was from the Columbia House Club because it's got a different spine.
Right. Have a little CRC somewhere on the back.
You know, Patrick, talking about cassettes, I think before I even met you, one of the first encounters I ever had with you was I went to a 930 Club show and you were handing out cassettes from your band.
That's right. I was that guy.
I think I still have that tape.
Yeah, here's the empty box demo. Take one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you mentioned, Mark, tour. So I don't know. Did you do a tour or any kind of, you know, multiple thing with your first book when it came out?
No, I did one or two events, like one in DC and one in San Francisco where my collaborator was based. But no, I didn't really, you know, that was just sort of just pre-social media enough that putting one of those together would have taken some sort of like a booking agent or something like that. Yeah. So
right.
this time around, it was so much easier to, I mean, the press, the UNC press helped a little bit. They booked a few of them, but after that, I just sort of reached out to friends and people would go, oh, my record store is open that day if you want to come or whatever.
Beautiful.
It's been really fun experience that way.
So how many stops did you do total?
So I did one kind of standalone one in LA, and then East Coast a couple weeks ago, I did eight in a row, actually.
Right.
So Atlanta, Asheville, Richmond, Chapel Hill, DC, Philly, Brooklyn, Baltimore.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Asheville's about 90 minutes away. It was a little too far on a weeknight for me to make that. I would have
I understand.
Yep. Yeah. I was in Richmond when you were in D.C., weirdly enough. So somewhere we passed each other on 95, which is a bummer because I wanted to go to that. So how did it go? What was your overall experience of the tour?
Oh, it was really fun. It was sort of an excuse to see a bunch of people I haven't seen in forever. So that's really cool, too. But the experience of doing them, I mean, I got a chance to pick out a lot of interesting, smart people to talk with at them, which I think is so much more fun than just doing a reading or a solo kind of lecture-y thing. Like this way we could have a real conversation, because especially with this subject matter, I know almost no one who doesn't have some experience with tapes.
Right.
So even if they haven't written about it or whatever, they have something they can share unique about it, which has been really cool. And yeah, a lot of great questions, a lot of interesting things. I've found a few things here and there that I, you know, that if I'd known about them, I might have dropped into the book a little bit. Sort of not so many anecdotes, so much as sort of big picture-y things that I hadn't really. Just thinking about the book makes me think about more, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's great. I mean, I think that meant that people had absorbed the book well, I thought, which was really nice for people to have done that who did read it. And yeah, I mean, I was sort of approached it all like kind of like more like a party celebration of cassettes than a lecture or a reading. Like wanted people to talk about what they had experienced with cassettes and how they'd done it. And like Tracy Wilson in Richmond and Jeff Krulik in DC both brought a bunch of their old cassette tapes, and we talked about different things. Jeff found a box of 12 tapes in his parents' house that were just numbered 1 through 12. And we listened to it. It turned out it was him interviewing his grandmother.
Is that right?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. But even more funny, when he got to the last one, he's listening, and halfway through, in the middle of their conversation, there's a whole Kansas album recorded. So I guess grandma's conversation wasn't that important that day, you know.
Us in the wind. I mean, come
I just
on.
Got left over to her, man. I gotta take it. Yeah.
Did you have the you know, like if you're out, you know, with a band for a few days on tour or whatever, did you have that hangover thing when you got home where you're like, oh God, I just need to sleep for like a solid day and a half?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I was never in a band that toured outside of plus playing locally, so it was an interesting experience that way. I guess I definitely realized how crazy it could be for someone who, number one, has equipment to move. I didn't have to
do
that.
Oh my God.
And has to deal with other personalities every night. You know, I mean, because it's so much like you go to sleep and you're immediately thinking, "What? How am I going to get to the next one the next day?"
Yeah.
It's just like, it's crazy. But I mean, luckily this was so much easier than a band tour thing that it was just total fun for sure.
And were you pretty happy with the turnouts and all that kind of stuff?
No, I was pleasantly surprised. Like the Asheville one, this is how dumb I am about tours. That date was open forever between Atlanta and Chapel Hill. And it just never occurred to me until like a week before, hey, Asheville's kind of in the middle of those two places. But I have enough, you know, nice friends there who were able to set one up for me. And there were like, you know, probably 25, 30 people there, which you know, out of the blue. So, yeah. So I really got lucky that there were so many people willing to come out and talk about it and check out the book. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. It sounds like it would be a lot of fun. Yeah. And were you giving tapes away or were people bringing you tapes like during this whole experience?
Yeah. Definitely people brought me some tapes, you know, especially a lot of musicians I know who, you know, who would be sending them to me anyway to listen to possibly for review or whatever. So I got a lot of those. I bought a few at stores along the way too. And,
then
I also have, I think I might have shown you that I put a cassette tape out that's a companion to the book.
Yeah, right? Talk about that, please. How did that come about? I
mean, so in the last chapter of the book, for people who haven't read it yet, there I talk about the cassette resurgence and I talk about a lot of the contemporary tape labels that I like. There are so many that I couldn't possibly have covered all of them, but they're more the kind of that make this kind of music I like, experimental, edgy rock kind of things. And so I had this idea at one point, you know, the obvious idea was, could I do a book on tape of me reading the book? But that was kind of precluded by the contract. They wanted to sell it to a digital audiobook person. So so then I got this idea. Well, I know a lot of these tape labels decently. Why don't I ask them each for a track and make a compilation so people can hear what's going on now in the cassette world? You know, so that's what it is. It's called High Bias Music from the Book. It's a compilation of 12 current labels that I really like a lot. And so that I had that with me on the whole tour and I was trading it with people or some people were buying it with the book or whatever. And it's been fun to pass that around. And it's just kind of a neat little side souvenir.
Did the labels donate those songs or just?
This great label House Sioux Mountain Chicago helped me through the whole process. Cause I don't know how to press anything or order things and stuff. And at one point I said to them, how am I going to divvy out the money on this? And they said, every time we've done a compilation, we've asked them if everybody would be okay with us donating the profits, because otherwise the bookkeeping is just out of control.
I would imagine.
So I have this friend, this noise guy, PBK, Philip Klinger, who's been restoring the work of this guy, Minoy, who I talk about in the book, an underground tape artist who made tons of tapes. And many of them only found after he died, and he's been working to restore them and put them on Bandcamp. So whatever proceeds I'm making, I'm giving him to use to restore all these.
Oh, wonderful.
Nice. That's great. Yeah. And is that tape available to purchase separate from the book for those of us who are lucky enough to have a copy already?
Yeah. If you go to highbiasbook.bandcamp.com, you can buy the tape just by itself. You can buy both. You can even buy the digital of the tape if you'd rather just play it digitally. But yeah, so yeah, you can buy the tape by itself there.
Fantastic. That's great. Harris, any
other
questions? Maybe I should have asked this earlier. I love the title, The High Bias, The Distorted History of the Cassette Tape. Talk about that. What's the distorted part of it? That really talks to me.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. That's one of the things that as I've gone on the tour, I probably would have even conceived the explanation a little differently. My main goal originally was that, you know, tapes are so personal. Everybody has an experience with them. And there was no way I was going to be able to write an objective book about tapes. I mean, some of the history is objective, but so much of it is my personal deciding what I liked about tapes and even, you know, who I thought were important in tapes. So I thought this is kind of a biased book. And it's kind of, you know, any history is going to be distorted to the person who's telling it, just like cassettes get distorted and get shaped by, you know, whoever's using it. So that was kind of the pun there, because high bias being an actual name of what used to be for higher quality blank tapes.
Yeah.
But as I've thought about it more, and I think this came across a little bit in the book too, the tape itself really distorted the history of music. Like music was controlled basically on just a couple levels by certain people, and tapes came in and really, I mean, disrupted. I hate that word disrupted now because it gets used in tech so much, but it is kind of applicable to this. Disrupted or distorted or just made it a more complicated thing that more people were involved, more people could do what they wanted to do. So I feel like the history of the tape is about distorting things, biasing things, making things personal. So I think that the title works for that as well.
Very interesting. One thing I wanted to ask you, Mark, before we closed, is the book. I noticed the book is dedicated to the memory of Eric. Is it Didwall?
Didwall.
Didwall. Okay. 1968, 1990. Can you briefly touch on who Eric was?
Oh, sure. Thanks for asking me that. So he was a friend of mine in college. I knew him mostly through college radio. We were DJs together at the radio station, mm-hmm. William & Mary, WCWM. And along the way, writing this book and talking to people, I've realized how much college radio and mixtaping are such overlaps. You know, I mean, people who were DJs were basically live mixtape makers, you know.
Yep.
So, you know, this book got me thinking a lot about all my friends in college and high school who I made tapes with. And Eric and I traded tapes all the time. And he unfortunately passed away during college. But his musical taste had a huge influence on mine. He introduced me to SST. I knew nothing about SST before he started showing me. And I was his parents bequeathed me some of his SST records, which is awesome.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So he was a big influence on my life. And I just felt like this was a good way to kind of remember him. And I think everybody has a memory of people like that who gave them a mixtape that they can't forget. Or, I mean, I have a story in the beginning about a mixtape I got from another friend that had a huge impact on me. And I tracked him down and he didn't even remember it.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. You're still thinking about that, Masters? What is going on?
But I bet everybody has a story like that where they got a mixtape that really changed things, you know, and the other person who gave it to them has no idea how much it impacted them.
Right. That's great. Well, it's very thoughtful and definitely within the spirit of the book to make that dedication. That's very nice. Very nice.
Well, thank you for asking about it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Great question. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, Harris, did you have anything else in your notes or?
Mark did a great job and I want people to read this because,
thank you.
Especially to the people listening to this podcast, they're all of a certain age, we'll say, and they know cassettes. So, you know, I can't recommend it enough.
I will second that. This is right up your alley, listeners. Suburbs Pod family, get out there and get this book. And you can also get Mark's first book, No Wave, which I have and quite enjoy. Definitely a little different. There may be a cassette or two mentioned in there, but it's definitely a really, really interesting book about a period of time. I think that's kind of misunderstood. So go to Amazon or Goodreads or whatever it is you use or Bandcamp and look around for this book, but also look for Mark's
previous book. And Mark, is there places that people can follow you on Twitter? I know at Marcissist, look for Mark Masters. But any other things you want to talk about? You should mention your podcast as well. I mean, you can listen to it after you're done with your daily rock in the suburbs. You can go listen to Mark's podcast. But talk a little bit about that too.
Okay. Yeah. Well, social media wise, yeah, it's Narcissist with an M instead of
I'm sorry.
So, no. You said Narcissist. You said it right.
Yeah.
So that's me on Twitter and Instagram and whatever. I can't remember what else I've signed up for. And and also I just have a kind of a placeholder website, highbiasbook.com, that goes to my tour dates and stuff like that, so people can check that out too. And then I have, as if the world needs more podcasts, I have two separate podcasts that are going right now. I have one called The Spindle, which my friend John Howard and I talk about a 7-inch record every episode. Love and that's it. Part of this Phoenix media website that I like a lot called Wastoids. So you can find that at wastoids.com.
Okay.
Spindle's and then great. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks so much for listening. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
TV was a lot of fun. And
oh, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of this excuse for me and to keep up with my friend John, who I used to be in a band with. But he knows so much about 7-inches and so much about music that I end up just sort of listening to him a lot, which is awesome. But yeah. And then I have a podcast called The Music Book Podcast, which is about exactly what it says, music books. So I interview one author per episode on a music book, sometimes a relatively recent one, sometimes an older one. And it's focused more on process. I think a lot of interviews with music book authors end up about the content, which I appreciate you guys asked about process today too, which I always interested in the content, but I'm also super curious just to find out all the weird decisions they had to make along the way to get to where they got. I always bring up this example. My friend John Lingan wrote a book about Creedence Clearwater Revival, interviewed everybody, didn't use a single direct quote from any of them. And so, and it was because he didn't want it to feel like a look back. He wanted it to be in the present moment the whole way. So decisions like that to me are really fascinating. And so I love asking authors about those kind of things.
Yeah, me too. I it's a great listen.
Definitely some good authors that, have been on Rockin' Suburbs podcast as well.
Yeah.
Patrick did a book nook on Matthew Goody's book that you interviewed Matthew Goody.
It was your first, what a great book,
interview. Mm-hmm. And that was how I discovered who you were, because somebody put that up about Matthew Goody. And I'm like, wow, that's great.
Oh, that's an amazing book too. That's a long overdue too. To have that all in one place is just.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being generous with your time. I'm sorry about your adopted Arizona Diamondbacks not quite getting the miracle run that it looked like they were on. Harris is the world's biggest Atlanta Braves fan, so I don't want to get him upset. So
well,
I better
that's fine, but I thank the Arizona Diamondbacks for doing the work of winning games 6 and 7 in Philadelphia.
That was the most beautiful
thing in the world to me.
It's funny. I did my event in Philly on the night game one of the World Series. If they had made it, it would have been there.
At
Philly while I was doing my event, but luckily it wasn't. And then everybody on social media was like, don't wear that Diamondbacks hat to your event. So, luckily I had a Nationals hat with me too, so I put that
on. That's okay. Yeah, that's better. Yeah. Stay
that
from
works,
harm.
That works.
Yeah, I should tell you guys, I really appreciate this podcast and everything you guys do with Rockin' the Suburbs. Mark. It's really awesome stuff. I really appreciate it. And Patrick and I go way back, and I've always thought of you as a great writer and a great thinker about music, and you've been a big influence on me, and I really appreciate you taking the time to read my book and talk to
me. Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. That means a lot. Yeah, Mark and I'm lucky enough to have known Mark from way back, and his brother John, and those guys have always been some of the best music people that I've known too. So before we start hugging and kissing, we better
thanks to both of you for letting me tag along.
Harris, thank you so much, I appreciate your questions
are great. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for being so enthusiastic, and really appreciate your help, Harris, very very much. Well, that's going to wrap it today. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to say thanks for listening, and with me today has been Harris King. Thank you, Harris.
Thank you.
And Mark Masters.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. We will talk to you guys later.
middle of their conversation, there's a whole Kansas album